World Heritage listed wet tropical rainforest, the importance of conservation in the Daintree and Atherton Tableland rainforests of far northern Queensland. Daintree's sentinel to the southwestern winds, the importance of the Atherton Tablelands.
Hi, I'm Shamrock, born into this world as Ian Brown. Many of us have heard of the World Heritage listed Daintree Rainforest in the wet tropics of far north Queensland. Some folk have even been blessedly intimate with this carnival of tangling triffid delight. Why, yes, it's the only ecosystem on the planet that has a representative of each of the ancient Gondwanan angiosperm families, the richest assemblage of ancient flowering plants on Earth. And besides, the tropical rainforest meets the coral reef here too. Try and name another place situated upon any continental landmass that this also occurs. Perched similar in latitude to other tropical southern hemisphere regions such as Tahiti, Fiji and Madagascar, this ancient jungle spawning dynasty whispers the secrets of Gondwanaland and the festive sacred corroborees of the local indigenous tribes, such as the coastal lowland Japanbara people, including the Guji Yulanji, home from Cape Tribulation to the Bloomfield River. To the south, Mount Bartle Frere, the roof of northern Australia at 1,622 metres, with its annual 9,000 millimetres of rainfall, the majority of which falls as wet season summer rains between December and March, as the trade winds and monsoon entice social chaos to do battle in the heavens above a landscape broiling in sickly indulgence of biodiversity. Amongst one third of Australia's marsupials and frogs, a quarter of our reptile species, 20% of Australia's bird life abounds, as well as 60% of butterfly and bat species also thrive here, amongst a tropical oasis thriving on the world's largest island. This romantically famous dry red landmass. My favourite bird, the mysterious, striking, and at times excitingly intimidating southern cassowary, stalks the dappled underworld of these most proud and elegant of rainforests.
Tropical voyages.
As a young, snow-haired child, I travelled to far north Queensland and the experience stayed with me. Later on, at the age of 8, I jetted over to Fiji for a short spell and on to Hawaii at age 20. From my very past life in Cronulla, beachside southern Sydney, I travelled north around Oz in 1995 and to start with, spent many months, when time permitted, hiking through the subtropical rainforests of northern New South Wales and southern Queensland border region, under the wisdom-nodding shadow of Mount Warning, Mighty Wallaban, and its extinct volcanic calderas, including the Lamington region, just inland from the commercialised glittering playground of the Gold Coast, and further north to the Conondale National Park region in the Blackall Range, the Sunshine Coast's hinterland. Half a year on in 1996, I drifted north of the Tropic of Capricorn to visit the fairy tale tropical rainforests of the Conway National Park region in central coastal Queensland, near Airlie Beach and the idyllic paradise of the Whitsunday Islands. In this region, you notice that the ficus species began to spread out their aerial roots out on banyan stilts, mesmerising the shadow-laden virgin, and as one bold king of figs leapt forth and high into the canopy, upheld with majesty and comical craft, on a bulky tripod root at its lengthy base, adorned by spidery lime-green epiphytes, the bird's nest fern, the whole life-rejoicing rendition like a tambourine-jingling rastafarian at a sunny weekend festival. Palm species, such as Alexandria palms, dominate the landscape instead of its southern cousin, the Bangalow palms, passing on the floral baton in more southern subtropical escapades. Biodiversity abounds and further increases, as does the extended hot, moist monthly calendar as you climb north towards the beckoning equator. Solitaire palms are pleasingly common, and the opportunistic estuarine crocodile habituate the coastline estuaries, rivers and creeks, posing a threat to those seeking a cool break by a lurk stream. Could it get any more tropical than this? Well, yes, actually, it does. For as I passed near to Hinchinbrook Island, with its towering Mount Bowen, the mainland rainforest took on a new, overgrowing bold reality, reminding me of my youthful time spent in Fiji, as the now larger tropical yellow lawyer palms choked the highway boundaries, the jungle withholding a collage of sensual yet courageous dark and lime green shades. Mission Beach and Tully, the highest lowland rainfall areas on the Australian continent, such relishing tropical rains blessing the landscape for many millions of years. These thriving forests of great antiquity surviving the onslaught of the Pleistocene ice ages, El Nino drought, destructive Pacific-born cyclones, only to be brought before the high court madness of contemporary human mismanagement, the lunacy of recent days, where the land was and still is seen by some as a realm on which to pillage, abuse and degrade. Both the beachside rainforest and tropical environments surrounding Mission Beach were splendid, though I, beckoningly nervous of a possible encounter with the endangered cassowary, and to the north, the Daintree rainforest was inspiring in its visual dynamics, a true coastal or montane paradise if ever there was. There are more than 14 types of rainforests in northern Queensland, varying in species composition due to altitude, distance from the ocean, and levels of deciduous microphyll vine thickets and evergreen mesophyll variation. The ever-present monstrous spider and many snake species, amazingly cheeky and proudly abundant. I could hear Peter Garrett singing, "Run to the top of the mountain," as my first spy upon a yellow-bellied black snake, slithering calmly into the hostile pool beneath the licular fan palm canopy, made me realise even further that I was in a special place, nature's place. Yet I had left Sydney 8 months previous at a heady age of 25 years of age, researching how private landowners in this ancient world heritage listed rainforest were scarring hilltop vantage points and forest areas to lay their foundations, allowing their walking jaw dogs and necessity cars to dispel from life my majestically adored cassowary. I had to pinch myself and ask my sifting anger, if this is what Australia and the world asks and desires of what a safety stamp of World Heritage listing conveys and upholds? Growl like a flippant maypole dance of the innocence of childhood, whilst the grim reaper snidely snips the ribbons on the outer and harshly licks the toffee apples of the joyous kind with his flu-ridden tongue, encroaching diseased mad sickness to the young well-mannered onlookers viewing the colourful and cultural spectacle. Land tenure in the Daintree rainforest is currently at 16% of total land area. What? We can't effectively save, protect and nurture one hugely significant global ecosystem, splendidly important and endemic rarity on only 1/1000th of the landmass of uniquely beautiful Australia, the southern land of government corrupt purging Antipodean development.
Daintree's sentinel to the southwestern winds. The importance of the Atherton Tablelands.
Yep, Cairns is growing. The roads are widening, and many well-wishers are striving to allow arboreal mammals the justifiable right to climb the tightrope of life to the other side, as canopy meeting places for arboreal fauna are diminishing. The remaining canopy has never been so important, it seems. The cassowary and other terrestrial fauna species aren't afforded the privilege, however, as a multi-lane highway to Kuranda through World Heritage Rainforests is further decreasing habitat. The sky rail over the exotic jungle to the wonderful hippie town above never looked so special. I'll never forget the day an English friend scuttled down the side of a small waterfall in Mount Hippopotami National Park in the Atherton Tablelands, to the west of Cairns. Not only because amongst the rush of broken water from a large boulder at the waterfall base, I laughed gut-wrenchingly for what seemed the rest of the day as he landed safely. The whole scenario smacked of a court jester after feasting on forest mushrooms, trying to dive down a well to gather gold and the title of brazen bohemian lunatic of the century. But two, because I clumsily spotted a Lumholtz tree kangaroo perched in a tree above a waterfall, upstream from the previously mentioned accident zone. An Irish friend was as infatuated by the experience as I was, and the three of us watched as this charming creature climbed down towards us amongst the trees, and even graciously allowed us the privilege of seeing this fine marsupial clamber along a ridge, becoming a terrestrial mammal once again for a wink in time. The actual volcanic crater of Mount Hippopotami, a deep, moist and green 55 metres to water, and a further 88 metres to its base. And yeah, the perfect idyllic tropical paradise Mille Falls and the gargantuan-sized curtain and cathedral figs are all spectacular sights. The drive up the mountain range from the steamy coastland below is an adventure in itself. Just don't tell the wee tree folk I told you this. But where has all that in-between stuff gone to? I mean, it's nice to see giant fig trees standing solitary in the middle of a farm paddock. It has a charm very similar to northern New South Wales. But this is one of the most important ecosystems in Australia, montane tropical rainforest. In Australian terms, these are relatively high mountain forests. The biodiversity is astounding, and yet, who took out all the corridors? Do I blame Sir Joe again? The farmers, surely. The timber getters? Who? I mean, I researched the kind-hearted community efforts to increase riparian and other rainforest habitat areas within the region later on in studies in years to come in both Sydney and Darwin, which included improvisations to prevent fire, such as planting ficus species and other fire-retardant and wind-blown weed seed-blocking triffids along the rainforest corridor margins. Even at this latitude, I'm sure it gets cold enough to include hardy rainforest acacia at this altitude, like Acacia melaloxylum. But I also know that through debating the importance of hotspots, important biodiversity regions, that small habitats function less effectively than do larger areas. That is common sense, which I researched and debated to further my understanding of this process at Charles Darwin University whilst majoring in tropical ecology. Yet corridors are the real answer when it comes to linking and improving the health of these regions that are desperately important in allowing the lowland rainforests and perhaps associated tropical mangle communities to diversify in times of climatic change and refugia for many fauna and flora species. Yes, you do have to manipulate these corridors, nurture them, removing weeds and perhaps predatory feral animal species such as pigs, dogs and cats, at least until the corridor margin or edge species have grown suitably in the first 10 years or so. And what about the indigenous mountain people? The Gumbuljara, the Djerbal, the Barbaram, the Jankum, and the Mulurigi. Do they grieve the passing of these once great forests? The tropical northern rainforest Aboriginal clans are famous for their detoxification leaching of fruit and nuts, such as black bean and rainforest walnut. Their wooden shields and swords, woven baskets, and semi-permanent waterproof bark huts are testament to their ingenuity. Aboriginal people here still identify strongly as being rainforest people, so absolutely and unequivocally no to the reoccurrence of the further dispossession of feverish, rancid past days. I, for one, can't be more respectful and excited by this rare jungle culture. And remember, this area in effect abuts the lowland rainforest of the Daintree and helps maintain the functioning of important hydrological systems between the mountains to the sea. How much of this has been harmfully affected due to intensive, non-sustainable land management practices? The topsoil incursions on the Great Barrier Reef in times of heavy rain due to ill-mannered land use practices, spewing forth from tropical streams and estuaries to coat the reef and dispel its photosynthetic coloured life, as another takes its place, algae. Another difficulty for humanity, does the soil system recoup lost nutrients effectively? Well, certainly not if it is being grazed or harvested inefficiently. Tropical savanna surprises one as they peep outside the rainforest boundaries, and the semi-arid region is not so distant either. Grow, grow, and please grow more corridors and sustainably manage areas now demoted of forest cover. Those hot, destructive, sclerophyll-borne fires also need managing to protect smaller jungle areas susceptible to heat damage. Indigenous heritage areas, signalled by sclerophyll ecosystems perched within the mesophyll rainforest communities, are now beginning to function once again as rainforest areas, as one of, if not the earliest forms of horticulture or agricultural practices on Earth, devised by the Aboriginal locals to burn harvest regeneration cycad seed over countless generations, is beginning to hide from history. If extinction forecasts are correct, then hugely important pollinator species are falling out of the system, ever diminishing habitats as ecosystems function less effectively. Thus, the health of these life-suckling ancient regions are being even further depleted. Yes, you can argue adaptation of new environments and the species therein, but at what cost? These great, proud rainforests are Gondwanan. Gondwanan, brothers and sisters. Think long and hard about that, and remember that the Congo and the Amazon, albeit as ancient as the Daintree and associated regional rainforests, yet they have been more heavily influenced by ecological change and biogeographical histories, and are less symbolic in nature as to their Gondwanan ancestry, it seems, as is our wee tropical Nirvana. The far northern Queensland rainforests, clinging to the Garden of Eden life via moist, sheltered gullies in hiding from the hot, dry interior winds and standing ground on basaltic volcanic nutrients during harsh glacial cycles. There are nipa palms, fishtail palms, coconut palms, and rattan species such as the Waitawaia lawyer palms in northern Australia, and reminiscent of nearby Southeast Asia, We did smash into the Asian continent 15 million years ago, we mustn't forget. We have bird families and placental mammal species now calling Australia home due to this arrangement. And in Wallacea, west of Papua to Sulawesi, and Timor over to Bali, our marsupials and perhaps cockatoos, etc., have invaded Asia also. Papua New Guinea, joined to Australia as flooded mountaintops in the Torres Strait Islands, shares much of our flora and fauna life. Our wetlands, tropical rainforest and savanna, let alone the more temperate latitudinal areas, are important wet season escapes and breeding habitats for many Papuan bird species, such as the forest and paradise kingfishers, the dollar bird, and the channel-billed and cowl cuckoos. And here's a curious matter. The Gondwanan microphyllid frogs arrived here from India via land bridges in the Miocene. India was nestled in between Western Australia and Africa in Gondwanan days, before we all headed north. So perhaps these frogs moved from one side of Australia to the other in effect, perhaps without ever seeing the now mostly arid Western Australian landscape. Remember, it was only a couple of years ago that the Federal Liberal Coalition Party wanted to scrap important Tropical Rainforest Cooperative Research Centre carbon research and coral reef studies that perhaps might harm their ill propaganda mantra in relation to non-renewable fossil fuel use. We need to push on with research that can help us live in favour of these beautifully important regions, not turn our backs in globalised landscapes. My cassowary, the fearless southern cassowary, I met him in the Atherton Tablelands. This large, black, gothic-looking creature. It sat right there next to my car. I was in jubilation. Here he finally is, and right by my hire car. To welcome me back from my walk around one of the trancingly exotic volcanic lakes in the Tablelands. I took some snaps, of course, and sat by him, the wattles on his neck a vibrant turquoise blue and blood red. His helmeted head and daggerish toes filled me with respectful awe. The car that killed this fine beast a couple of years down the track, perhaps less so. He remains in my mind the last great warrior to walk the peace trail to meet the tourists, even though his kind was being evaporated into the air of human development and capitalism. Majestically bold, metallic goth black, blue and blood flowers red, yet gone forever. I respected you. Sorry. Yes, we will soon discuss some of the contemporary land management details invested in rainforest restoration and development under the banner of community desire and earthy empathy. National and international conservation coordination, including university research interests, and government investment into the future of this tableland forest is a reality. But the reality also is that the greater majority of the Atherton Tablelands is used as freehold land, some land having been saved as national parks, thankfully. Sadly, there are not enough folk replanting trees on private land. The ones who have delved into incentives to replant and suckle corridors to life, thanks, we mean it. There just isn't enough affordable land available for large-scale agroforestry or reforestation projects. Cash crops abutting rainforest stands.
As it stands.
So let's talk facts. What is needed to improve the overall functioning of biodiverse rainforest life in the Atherton Tablelands? And what is currently being achieved to approach these goals? Perhaps we should begin this new testament with the engine of life itself. And I'm not talking about Hollywood here, folks. The real stuff, weather and climate, my friends. With estimates placing endemic rainforest species extinction rates as high as a possible 50% in the tropics due to global climate change, it seems only fitting that we might need to forecast changes and dynamic variations in climatic change and localized weather patterns. I personally believe that this will be a real hazard, as the weather won't allow us the privilege of taming its erratic behavior. It will deceive us time and time again. I feel that it would divulge new and ever-evolving reactive interactions within the landscape and atmosphere. The whole system will not reach any real equilibrium during escalating temperature increases. It will shuffle and reshuffle and not allow for a constant theme, as fluctuating, localized conditions will not breathe the consistencies of any soap opera script. Climate change, with the emphasis on dynamic change, unsettled and wiry chaos, at least until we act in nature's favour. But yes, we can only try and write a nurturing survival will and testament, and this begins with researching the climatic conditions as it stands in relation to rainforest landscapes in far north Queensland, with the effect of season and localised micrometeorological conditions.
CO2.
Very little is known at present about the localised effects of climate in varying rainforest landscapes. Queensland CRC Carbon Research has communicated variations in rainforest carbon emissions, ecological use and storage of CO2. Surprisingly, it seems the rainforests of the lowlands reach equilibrium and decrease localised use of CO2 emissions. Cyclone damage will undoubtedly provide for a variation in carbon cycling and functioning with increased vegetation matter, such as tree fall availability. At what rate will this affect the carbon ratio? Does a deficit in rainforest carbon usage and increased CO2 production influence how the carbon is transferred and used in the natural system? Has to. Does a system place increased energy in organic matter breakdown only to dispel its emissions to the atmosphere and reject recycling it locally as organic carbon growth in living trees, for example? More research is needed to better understand the rainforest atmospheric interactions, the dynamics of vegetation growth patterns in relation to rainforest microclimates. Then we can forecast the diverse, changeable weather patterns related to global warming and adapt this information as best we can to extreme variation in localized conditions. How will natural carbon cycles in the Atherton Tablelands react or interact to further increases in atmospheric CO2 and increased temperatures, for example? Will this cause reactive adaptations to plant reproductive cycles, new panic-stricken survival strategies to conform to these extreme variations in atmospheric conditions that include increases in temperature at a pace never seen before, to a now smaller, less favourably resilient safety-sized ecosystem? This is an exciting science curiosity I would rather avert, and a slap to the face of the USA and Australian Conservative governments for rejecting Kyoto agreements. Does this smack of social change? One that allows for the corrosion of these habitats? What effect does human impact have on the carrying capacity of tropical rainforests? What are the limits of acceptable change?
Social change. Fragmentation in the outside world is a reflection of the fragmentation of the inner self.
Future social change will affect the modelling and recovery rate of restoration and rehabilitation of rainforests in the region. I'm very glad to say that there is some wonderful and creative conservation work beginning to emerge in the Tablelands. We will talk of this soon enough. But improved fauna and flora inventory, management of exotics and invaders, and indicators of ecosystem dysfunction and fragmentation studies need to be further instigated to keep up with the demands of changing social and climatic variables. The protection of Aboriginal heritage sites and improved bipartisan management, including complete Indigenous access to sites, needs undertaking. The practice of generational cultural transmission needs further community commitment and funding. The facilitation of sacred kindred practice in Aboriginal terms, including complete harmonious secrecy where favourable by Indigenous parties, initiated. The allowance of ecotourism activities for the wider community, if and where desirable, thus the relinquishment of worldly shared knowledge. This, I feel, could help improve the world's curiosity and acknowledgement of the natural and cultural diversity that exists in this part of the world. There are some colourful and exciting cultural ecotourism ventures thriving in far north Queensland already. This benefits all if it isn't over-commercialised, with the important messages being lost in transmission. A fib of denial on the learned message stick of multiculturalism, as this bridge should never be built by the Bob Jellies of society. There is a dire need to improve our innate understanding of how the rainforest functions, how the ecosystem interrelates between all properties of life. This includes the effects of disturbance and fragmentation in the Atherton Tablelands, how soil moisture, soil chemistry, and soil structure influences seedbank survival and seedling prosperity and species succession, the conditions needed for favourable seed germination and establishment of rainforest flora, a call for the population studies of important species, and plant community studies of functional groups is also required. Mutual fauna and flora relationships, including the dynamics of pollinator and seed dispersal behaviour, needs to be formulated and communicated to the world. An example of this is the disappearance of Melaleuca communities, abutting rainforest areas that the cassowary requires. Are we going to provide for habitat inclusion related to the varying life history trait requirements of different fauna species? Let's improve and increase the research of key species and single species' importance in the ecological functioning within and between populations of animals and plants. We still lack clarity in the beneficial understanding of genetic variation, biographic and demographic rainforest community history. Where, what, and how do they do all this under these conditions? Increasing and decreasing genetic variability, adaptive mutation under pressure, and to what degree? I mean, has global warming already influenced the genetic variation or theoretical decreases in variation spoken by the holders of toiled wisdom in the sake of humanity and for the love of Mother Earth, our Earth?
Answers, anyone?
Well, it's happening. Yep, well-meaning people, hopefully like you, are getting out there and trying to get something organised. The healing of the Tablelands has begun, but further work is desperately needed. Here are some examples of scientific and collaborative conservational progresses in the very beautiful Atherton Tablelands of far northern Queensland. Studies communicated via Rainforest Rescue have shown the effects of placing nesting box platforms in open grassland areas in the Atherton Tablelands, theoretically acting as corridors for rainforest fauna species. These nesting platforms consist of old electricity poles with crossbars bolted to each pole, 5 metres above the ground. Although they are not as effective as mature trees for nesting and feeding sites, rainforest fauna species have taken an interest in them, and if these man-made structures prove successful, then they will remain in chosen open grassland sites at spacing intervals of 30 to 40 metres. Considering many landholders in the region are still reluctant to plant out corridors, I feel this is a great idea as trees do take time to grow, and these nesting platforms are up and ready to support the needs of fauna species in the region. particularly if much of the materials used derived from recycled products. Well then, how do animal species behave in these open grassland areas abutting rainforest margins, you may be asking yourself. Relevant recent research has also shown that fruit bats, flying foxes etc., use a greater variety of blossom and pollen producing tree species than do many of the bird species inhabiting the open areas and rainforest margins. Not all native flowering tree species are commonly embraced by the majority of floral visitors, as many fauna species are specific when visiting pollen and nectar sources, it seems. And agricultural blossom, such as banana flower, are favourite food sources also. Musa, the banana, doesn't produce pollen, only nectar. Our predation on nocturnal fauna species also occurs in the open spaces, further reason to reforest areas. A curious matter concerns the change in bird calling behaviour in the same species but in differing locations. Fragmentation of rainforest areas has had an impact on the localised calls and increased aggressive behaviour of birds in smaller rainforest patches as compared to larger patches, researchers depicted on the Atherton Tablelands. It appears that fragmentation pressures influence the behavioural adaptation cycles of birds, including the golden bowerbird. Bird species have also been described as being less abundant in isolated rainforest patches and within secondary forests as compared to primary rainforest ecosystems. Specialist rainforest bird species, many of which include endemic avian species, are also less abundant across all forest types than non-endemic species, research also suggests.
Planting trees is for the birds.
As for bird behaviour in riparian zones in relation to tree usage, the fencing of creek lines in study region of the Atherton Tableland and the replanting and monitoring of rainforest communities has shown that frugivorous bird species are abundant even in the young plantings, thus connecting once isolated rainforest patches with even young plantations is a windfall for native fruit-eating birds, increasing riparian rainforest zones and helping diversify remnant patches, even within a three-year period. Corridors between two national parks have been planted, at Lake Barine and Wurundjeri National Parks. Greening Australia, a voluntary conservation organisation, has been restoring rainforest areas on both the Atherton and Everton Tablelands. The Massey Creek project has seen the planting of 12,000 trees and includes studies on the movement of fauna species between habitats, where studies are also taking place by the Queensland National Parks and Wildlife Service on the desired favourite foods of fauna species. The Wet Tropics Management Authority prepared 12 kilometres of creek at Donohue's corridor for stock exclusion also.
Studies that aid in reforestation management.
CSIRO's studies on seed and seedling dispersal, along with the distribution and persistence studies, have provided a clearer picture of the impacts of fragmentation and reforestation on the Atherton Tablelands in primary and secondary forests. Adequate reforestation management practices that influence and facilitate the varying seeding mechanisms of rainforest plant species can assist in the reliance on shade qualities by emerging rainforest organisms. This includes recognising water and nutrient availability in relation to rainfall distribution and soil type, and physical damage variables occurring under differing canopy and plant community structures. Shade isn't the only factor contributing to seedling prosperity. Drought and leaf litter availability affecting seed production, mass seed destruction and seedling establishment variables, and the dispersal species survival strategies, such as rats, marsupials, fruit-eating birds, and bats, are also factors that influence seed and seedling survival rates in tropical rainforests. The radio tracking of mammals and also the foraging distance behavior of flying foxes, muskie-rat kangaroos, and bowerbirds has been implemented to investigate fauna habitat use and seed traveling distance. The importance of the cassowary in long-distance seed dispersal, for example, and the fragmentation impact on the mysterious Lumholtz tree kangaroo is being researched scientifically also. The regional external sources of seeds is also a very important factor and is currently being investigated, as to the internal plant reproductive rates and seed fecundity details in relation to secondary and primary rainforest ecosystems. Other components of such studies include spatial interdispersal of different plant species and the details related to species composition, including the dominance and rarity of flora species in forest regions. CSIRO and Rainforest CRC study and recognition of ecological life traits of rainforest ecosystems can facilitate the effective management efforts of the limiting factors of reforestation, such as seed dispersal, and reinstate biodiversity to impoverished areas. With such contemporary research findings, information and attributed management principles assisting in the regeneration of species and the functional diversity of secondary rainforest communities in the Atherton Tablelands, more harmonious and cost-effective rainforest management options can now be implemented worldwide. As outlined in the Rainforest CRC Cairns et al. Sustaining the Wet Tropics Regional Plan for Natural Resource Management, January 2004 report, land tenure details concerning a number of rainforest Aboriginal groups on Wet Tropics World Heritage Areas in far north Queensland, under the Native Title Act 1993, suggests that Indigenous ownership from 80 to 98% of claimants is a possible reality. Yet the full implication of what adheres to a native title rights and the Aboriginal interests remains unclear. However, it's a start and a further feather in the loyal cap for Eddie Mabo's well-striven cause. The report also describes that native forest inclusion on private land within the wet tropics has increased in importance since the abolishment of logging and with the inclusion of World Heritage listing of rainforests. Unfortunately, the effective marketing of timber on private land for the landowner is poorly understood due to the scattered distribution of such landowners. It seems the use of native hoop pine, Araucaria cunninghami, and the introduced Caribbean pine, Pinus carabea, more commonly grown in plantation forests in the wet tropics, is producing monocultural communities less favourable for effective ecological functioning requirements. I feel it would be more beneficial to subscribe to a diversity in timber products with an increased range of appropriate native species used, provenance, alongside the charitable inclusion of key species and needy fauna habitat requirements for further pollination and seed dispersal increases outside of both existing public and private land and into adjoining rainforest communities.
Feel free to rescue the rainforest from turmoil. SOS, time to help.
It's easy. Rainforest Rescue and its associated conservation organisations have an ingenious way of to support life in the Daintree, where I, for one, have proudly put my name and some funds towards buying back land in the Daintree Rainforest, which will remain protected forever as a functioning high biodiversity region. Of course, Rainforest Rescue have an interest in protecting the Atherton Tablelands also, and by buying back land in the Daintree, we are effectively increasing habitat, which links to all regions within the wet tropics, and facilitating the needs of migratory birds from Papua New Guinea. Rainforests are important recreation, research, and educational and medicinal usage areas. Forget about bureaucracy and social neglect. We must all work together and do this happily with pride and care. It is time to nurture what we have left and increase and embrace sustainability in this region of the world. We can and are doing it. Jump aboard Mother Earth, my friend. It's time to love. The Earth is shrinking in natural biodiverse habitat. Human populations are ever increasing, but we can protect and love these regions. And not just here, but also in Ecuador, where Rainforest Rescue is waving the olive branch of peace also. Land can be purchased with your help. It costs very little to nurture. I, for one, am poor in capital wealth, but rich in desire and love for these ecosystems. And I now proudly own and share parts of the Daintree World Heritage Rainforest and have a vested interest in all rainforest regions, not only in far northern Queensland, the home of the vanishing southern cassowary, muskie-rat kangaroo and Lumholtz tree kangaroo, where the calls from exotic tropical island birds from Southeast Asia and our own forgotten self, Papua New Guinea, can be heard alongside their Australian cousins, but too, all earthly rainforest ecosystems. And this includes my volcanic homeland subtropical rainforests in northern New South Wales, where the fig tree not only stands solitary in the farm paddock, but where too the big scrub whispers the secret knowledge under the loyal, loving gaze of mighty Wallaman in the land of the Bundjalung. My journey is almost complete in knowing that I am achieving what is important to myself and to the environment with Rainforest Rescue and associated kindly organisations, and also in collaboration with other like-minded, intelligent, ever-nurturing folk who know what it is like to be spiritually engaged and touched by biodiversity and tranquility, and knowing that the ever-respected and admired David Suzuki also cares for the Daintree Rainforest, championing his well-heeled word, our word, the most important word, life.